Well, Nick, I'll tell you what. In the second half of the season, and now a few days after the trade deadline, I am looking for learning opportunities when it comes to takeaways for the Blue Jays in basically every game. Like, the actual result of the game, and today was an 8-3 loss to the Yankees, sets up the rubber match tomorrow, but like, the actual result doesn't mean a whole lot to me. I'm curious where you are on that. I just want to see some progress in some areas. I want to learn more about this team and learn things I didn't know, maybe see some more from guys who are competing for roster spots next year. I think that's what a lot of the rest of the season is going to be. But, man, I'll tell you what, I don't think I learned a whole lot about really either side in this ballgame. Like, my takeaways were largely Vladdy hit ball real hard, Judge hit ball real harder, and Berríos still has some struggles with the slurve and the four-seamer. I mean, that's kind of it. Like, you tell me if there are any larger topics for us to get to. Like, we can talk about Spencer Horwitz, and we can talk about Joey Loperfido, and maybe even a clean inning for Eric Swanson, certainly, but it's somewhat of a ho-hum game today.
Yeah, they did not put on a show, you'd put it that way. In terms of José Berríos, as you mentioned, the struggles that he encountered in this game are struggles that are consistent with what we've seen from him in the last little bit. It has been the home run ball that's hurt him. Now, I want to give him some credit here. That first one, he just got judged. You know, like, that was a ball that was inside. The vast majority of hitters are just not able to do anything with that pitch, to be honest. And Judge put it over the wall on what was almost like a half swing. It's just, it's insane what he's able to do. Yeah. He's in a different category from a power standpoint. So you could argue, and one of the runs was unearned too. So José Berríos's day was maybe not as bad as those stats would show in the box score. At the same time, you give up three home runs, hard to win the game. Bad things are going to happen. The Vladdy of it all, I mean, we talked about it before the game. He's been unbelievable recently. I'm just going to throw a few stats at you. 16-game hitting streak. During that time, 31 hits, so almost two hits per game. Nine of them doubles, nine of them home runs. Like, it is absolutely ridiculous. Keep in mind, this is a guy who had only 15 extra base hits in the first 2 months of the season combined. So in his last 16 games, he's created way more production than that. Not enough can be said about how fantastic he's been, but you know, through the game, they had some late inning, a couple hits from the rest of the team, but he had more total bases than the entire rest of the team combined for much of the game. Nobody else was doing anything with the bat, including the young guys. So, you know, Spencer Horwitz had some moments. It's shouting out his 11-pitch walk.
Sure.
You know, that was a great moment for him. He had a hit later on. But generally speaking, it was Vladdy and no support whatsoever around him.
That is Nick Ashbourne. I'm Sho Ali. You're listening to Jays Talk live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're also streaming on sportsnet.ca and on the Sportsnet app. You can give us a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. You can text us as well, 590-590, name and location. The People's Text Line always open. And as you know, standard message and data rates may apply. Yeah, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., 22nd home run of the season. And, you know, it's funny, whenever we have conversations about Vladdy, Nick, and you just rattled off some of the stats about him, nine home runs now in 16 games for Vladdy. You talked about the 16-game hitting streak and everything that's come along with it. But I do think there is an upper limit of what Vladdy will get when it comes to contracts. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like every home run he hits, it's like, oh, well, it's another $2 million to the final amount. Like, that's not how it works, obviously, but he is on an absolute tear. Like, he has been so much fun to watch. Like, and we joke about him cutting his hair, but certainly since the All-Star break even, like, it's a span that covers about, I would say, like 30 to 35 games, maybe a little bit more based on where we're at in the season now here on August 3rd. But Vladimir Guerrero Jr. has been absolutely filthy from an offensive standpoint. And yeah, I can mix in a couple of kind of questionable moments, base running here or there, or questionable moments defensively, but like, by and large, it's been fine on both of those ends. So like, he's been fine to good in both of those cases, and then now you're adding all the prodigious offensive production you're getting from Vladdy. It's pretty remarkable. I said to you in the pregame, and this is a conversation we've had a lot recently, and I mean, gosh, we're past the trade deadline. It's one of the only things we're going to talk about consistently between now and the end of the season, but just how much money is Vladimir Guerrero Jr. going to earn himself? And I guess we'll see. I just find the process of what will happen next for Vladdy, Nick, really interesting. Because, I mean, it's August 3rd. We have just a little under 2 months left in the regular season. Seems pretty unlikely he's going to sign a contract in season. So now you're looking ahead to the offseason, and he's still under contract for next year as well. So let's say he goes to arbitration without them getting a deal done. And that's going to happen some point before March or whatever. So we'll, or in March perhaps, but we'll see before the season starts next season what that looks like. But if he goes to Arb, he's going to be making probably, like you said earlier, $24 to $25 million thereabouts. And I mean, it's not a huge stretch to go from, he's making 19.9 this year, from 19.9 to 25 to like whatever he's going to get long term. You know what I mean? Like, again, I've said this before many times, but when it comes to like trying to adjudicate what Vladdy will get, it's, you're not starting from zero, right? Like, you're starting from the ARB number essentially. So like it establishes a baseline, I suppose, but to go from like 25 million, if that's what he gets in arbitration next year, to like 27.5 million or even 30 million. Like, it's not a huge gap, which is why it makes me feel it will get done eventually, even if, you know, it might be a little bit of a, like a bit of a viewed tight as a tight situation because it obviously hasn't yet happened.
Yeah, that arbitration is just such a floor on what it's going to be on a year-to-year basis. And I think people, there'll be some sticker shock. There always is with players, you know, these days with inflation and the way that salaries have gone up. Like, the comparables for him, you mentioned before the show, like a Miguel Cabrera. And I don't think he's on that level of consistency. In terms of his high-end talent, he could be Miguel Cabrera. Like, you know, what we're looking at right now, it looks an awful lot like it. But he hasn't done that year in, year out. But you throw that contract against it, that was years and years and years ago. And there just are not a lot of guys his age, his position. We talked about Rafael Devers also before the show. But if you use that floor of mid-20s, and then you probably put a bit of a ceiling on it, like, they're probably not going to go into sort of the mid-30s for a guy who's a first baseman. It is kind of a tight range, and it might end up being more about term than it is about that AAV, because it doesn't feel like there's that much room to play with in that area.
Jeff Passan had said to Blair and Barker that he thinks they're going to wait to see what the Pete Alonso market looks like for before, like, they sign Vladdy, or at least before they have further conversations about it, which I think, like, in a general sense makes sense, if only because he's like, he's just like another highly paid first baseman that's going to market. Obviously, there are a lot of dissimilarities between Alonso and Vladdy. I think most notably their age, right? Because like, Vladdy's 25, going to be 26 next year. Alonso is 29, going to be 30 next year. So, and it's different, because when you're paying up for Alonso, you're just going to get less of Alonso than if you're paying like Vladdy, however much money, $324 million, $27 million over 12 years, right? Like, it's just going to look different when you pay a 25-year-old versus paying a guy who's almost 30. So I totally get that it's not quite an apples to apples comparison. But at the same time, I do kind of wonder, Nick, when it comes to like paying Vladdy money, and if you do hope to take any, like, a run at significant free agents, and like, who, I'm not saying Juan Soto's going to sign with the Blue Jays, but I mean, if you do expect that the conversation between the Blue Jays and Soto's representation to be like a legitimate one, even if he does end up re-signing with New York, or he signs with the Mets or something like that, seems pretty likely. But if you think it's going to be more than just like a, hello, how much is Soto going to cost? Oh, that's it. And then they hang up the phone. If you want it to be a longer conversation than that, I just feel like on like, just in terms of, and Soto is the extreme example, but it just in terms of luring big money free agents to Toronto, you generally want to have your marketable, young, very productive star under contract for a longer term. Like, it just, that I think lends itself to roster building easier, because it A, shows that your team is willing to spend money, and B, it also shows that you have a plan in place, especially for a couple of really younger, talented guys. And again, am I saying that it's going to result in Juan Soto signing here? I don't know. I certainly hope so, because that'd be pretty fun for us to talk about. But just in a general sense, I mean, you look back at when George Springer signed with the Blue Jays, and yes, they went a little bit extra in terms of term and money to get Springer to sign with Toronto, but like, he chose Toronto over, let's say, the Mets, because at the time, the Blue Jays they looked like they were more competitive than New York, and then, you know, Cohen came in and bought the Mets and is now spending a bazillion dollars on refurbishing everything in New York at Citi Field. But like, you know what I mean? Like, it just does, I think, needle point towards a definite direction, which in the last maybe year and a bit, it's kind of feel the Blue Jays have lacked.
Yeah, I don't think it's so much that people want to come and play with Vladdy. And if you play with Vladdy, that's going to guarantee championship contention. Now, we are seeing some of the best Vladdy we've ever seen right now. Even his season-long numbers are creeping towards, in terms of comparing them to league average, they're not so far from 2021 at this point. But we know the Blue Jays are nowhere near competing. So just having Vladdy does not mean that you're competing, even if he's playing at his highest level. But if you're a free agent like, you know, like Soto being the extreme example, or anyone else, you look at a team that does not, like the counterfactual, does not re-sign a young player in their prime who's performing at a superstar level and does not have a clear route to competing, even if Vladdy doesn't guarantee competing, not having him is putting you on the road to not competing in a lot of in a faster lane. So signing him isn't necessarily going to guarantee that they compete, but it is a bit of a statement of intent in terms of we are pushing this franchise in this direction, and teams around the league see that, players around the league see that, and it would be easier to lure people in if you can say, look, we are investing huge dollars in our internal talent, in our star, in this team going forward. No guarantees, but if you let him go, that is also a statement of intent that you're not willing to pony up to play with the big teams and keep your big superstar.
416-870-0590, 1-888-660-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's go to the phones. We'll go back to the text line, or go to the text line in a second here, but let's go to the phones. Let's go to Joe in Mississauga. Joe, what's up today?
Hey, hi, Cheryl. Hi, Nick. I'm glad you guys are taking calls because I don't like leaving messages and texts.
Sure.
It's just to vent a bit, but, you know, we can't give the front office a pass. We can't give Atkins a pass for what he did at the trade deadline. He created this in the offseason, and really, anyone that knows anything about baseball saw it. I mean, he brought in Vogelbach. Are you kidding me? Turner, okay, but we needed left-handed bats. We needed position players, and he other than Vladdy and Bo on the infield, that was solid. Really, the outfield, he brought back Kiermaier. Nobody wanted him. I love Kiermaier, but really, nobody wanted him. Varsho, who's a great outfielder, but, I mean, we got to do something about the average. And Springer's on in years. I mean, Atkins is to blame for all of that. And the coaching staff. I mean, I go back to Schneider and the playoffs last year. That was the start of it. I mean, my wife said, is someone on the take here? Like, why did they pull Berríos? I know I hate to dwell on something, but that was a coaching management decision. That whole front office has to go, and the coaching staff, in my mind. Who do you bring in? Who would the fans accept? I know, now I'm pipe dreaming it, but when Beeston and Anthopoulos were involved and in charge, didn't we have some excitement? And I believe they were, when they spoke, you felt it was sincere. When Atkins speaks, I don't want to hear it. Shapiro, give him credit for the Rogers Center. It's a great facility. It looks great. I'm really happy with it. But the ball teeth. I mean, Bichette's lost confidence in all these guys. He doesn't want to come back. And I'm really surprised even with Vladdy saying that he wants to stay. I think they've lost confidence, too. But that's my take, guys.
Hey, Joe, thanks for the call. I appreciate it, man. So a lot there, certainly, Nick. I think, okay, so, but Joe's general, I think, take is that the front office should not get a pass, right? Like, he went into detail on some things, but just that the front office should not get a pass, which I think is a valid comment, considering I don't think the entire conversation on the front office has entirely changed after the trade deadline. I do think there is some positivity, and, you know, I think you should probably give credit where credit is due when they make good trades because people are frustrated with them. But even if I were to give them, like, I think I would give them, let's say, I think you said B+ for the trade deadline when we were talking in the pregame show. I'd probably say a B, right? And I say that largely because we have no idea what most of these prospects are going to look like, or even the guys they just drafted. We have no idea what these guys are going to look like for a couple of years, probably, right? So if that's the case, then I find they did the thing I wanted them to do. They traded away all their expiring contracts. They traded away a couple of guys on top of that in terms of Pearson and IKF, but I mean, it's kind of hard to judge, but I still don't think, even if I was pleased that they did the thing I wanted them to do, the front office, I don't think I personally will look past, and I don't agree with everything Joe said, because I think, I only say that because I believe some of it falls on the players themselves, some of it does fall in the front office, some of it does fall on the coaching staff, so everyone kind of eats a little bit of that blame pie in terms of who gets blame here and there, but I just, my general consensus is, even if I was generally happy with how the trade deadline went, you know, 9 years, no playoff wins, a lot of regular season wins, but no real results to show for it. Like, even had they gone to like the ALCS or even the ALDS and made it competitive, I might honestly view it differently, but not a single playoff win in the Bo and Vladdy era is a tough pill to swallow, right? So I think that's why, for me, in my opinion, has not largely changed on needing a new voice in there when it comes to the front office next year.
I think it's also okay to have a low opinion of a body of work and also acknowledge that something has gone right. Like, there's room for nuance in this discussion. Like, has this been a successful front office? I don't think that Mark Shapiro or Ross Atkins would tell you that they've achieved what they hoped they could have, especially based on some of the quality players they're able to bring along, like Vladdy, like Bo, you know, a little later on, like Alec Manoah and Alejandro Kirk. Based on that foundation, they probably should have done a better job. But I don't know if I buy the kind of structure of letting them off the hook, not letting off the hook. I think it's just okay to acknowledge, like, as a broader thing, they have not necessarily succeeded, but in this one case, they did. They also succeeded in, say, the Kevin Gausman contract, broadly speaking, or the Kikuchi deal, or the Bassett deal. When you're around for a long time, and show, you're talking about nearly a decade.
Yeah.
You're going to do some things right. If I were the GM of the Blue Jays for 10 years, I would make some good deals. I'm not saying that I'd be qualified for that job or I'd do a good job, but I would, I'd sign the odd decent contract. I'd make the odd good trade. And so I think people are just so venomous towards this front office that there needs to be this constant punishment for them. Like, we need to keep whipping them and pointing out that they're bad. It's like, yeah, sure. Generally speaking, they haven't done it. And yeah, you can make a good argument that it's time for them to leave. But that doesn't mean we need to drill down on every single thing and make sure that we all agree that it was the wrong thing. That just seems silly to me.
590-590 is the text line. Let's go to the text line, Nick. We were talking about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. a little bit, and I thought these are some interesting ones. Actually, I'll read this one first. This is from Daryl in Cambridge. Daryl says, in regards to Vladdy, he has always hit in the top four, unlike Bowen George. He will play third when needed and sells more jerseys than anyone else in Toronto. Wants to be here. Pay the man. That's from Daryl in Cambridge. There's no name on this one, but I thought it was an interesting question. Do you think Vladdy's camp will point to the fact that he came up as a third baseman and that it was the team's decision to try him at first, plus he's shown he can play there? You know, I'd be shocked if that wasn't at least part of the argument for Vladdy, right? Because, and again, it's not like he's done it a ton. Like, this year was the first time we've really seen him, like, make starts at third since his rookie year. Like, after his rookie season, I think he made a couple of, like, emergency quote-unquote starts at third base, or, like, defensive substitutions, guys getting mixed, moved around the infield, and he's ended up at third. But in terms of actually starting games at third base since his rookie season, this year is the first year he's really done it, like, more than once, essentially. So, but he's only really still done it even with that in mind, like, what, six times or whatever it is this season?
Yeah, five starts.
Five, so there you go. So I do wonder about that, though, because even if I don't personally view Vladdy as a long-term third baseman, just again, and it's something we talked about in the pregame show, but just the idea that he's, like, a bigger guy, and that's not to shame him, but just, like, in terms of having the, like, in order to be able to make the kind of quick lateral moves you need at third base, I just feel like most really successful third basemen are not at, like, you know, look at Matt Chapman recently.
Think
for
about
example.
The play Ernie Clement made today,
sure,
like,
yeah,
that
yeah.
one movement throw to first base, like, it's hard to envision Vladdy making that throw. And that's a really good one that not all third basemen make.
But, yeah, yeah.
You know, this is a guy who's played, I'm looking at it here, you know, 48 innings at third base since 2020. It's hard as his agent to go in and slam your hand on the table and say, this is a guy who's a third baseman. Like, it need to be paid accordingly. Like, it is an option. It is something that gives him a little bit more value around the fringes in terms of how he can help the team construct a lineup or even make late game substitutions. I'm not saying it's worth nothing. And even, you know, especially in kind of a playoff game or a really crucial individual matchup, maybe that'll make a difference. But if you're selling Vladdy, for, you know, a decade, maybe a decade plus, the fact that he has this little thing in his tool set is just not a big part of the equation.
I see another text here on the text line, 590-590, name and location. It was Carter from Toronto. Carter says, why is Ross Atkins still here? Also, do you think the Jays should have traded Bo Bichette? I mean, Ross Atkins is still here, like, right this second at the very least, mainly because, I mean, to fire the GM, like, after the trade deadline, I don't know what it would really
accomplish.
Yeah,
what, you're going to have someone else make the waiver claims to fill out this bullpen in the last couple of months? It just doesn't achieve anything.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Don't get me wrong. I still think that they should probably go. But, I mean, you're like, the time to make the decision was either, like, the previous offseason or the next offseason, right? And, I mean, especially as we got closer to the draft and then the deadline a couple weeks later, just in the last month or so, if they hadn't made the change leading up to the draft, they just weren't going to make the change this year, right? And I mean, Shai has written about this before for sportsnet.ca, but he's kind of made some commentary about the idea that there's a real possibility Ross Atkins doesn't get fired in the offseason, but it is not the GM, right? He could get, like, kicked upstairs to a different role. Maybe they give him the title of, like, special advisor to the president of baseball operations or something like that, and then they hire someone else to work for Shapiro. But I personally don't think that would really appease anyone based on the tenor of the comments we generally speaking get, Nick. But that is at least to answer the question. That's probably why, because I don't think it would make a meaningful difference between now and the end of the season. Do you think the Jays should have traded Bo Bichette, though? I say no also, because for, I think, a bunch of reasons, Nick. One is that if you trade him now, you're trading him at his, like, lowest value, right? Like, you're trading him at his absolute lowest value because he's injured. He's had a miserable year. There have been multiple injuries this year, like the neck spasms and the calf strains, of which there have been three now. So I don't know if you really want to trade, like, really, not even just Bo. I don't know if you want to trade any player when they're at that point of their value. But at the same time, as much as I do think Bo is going to test free agency because he's a shortstop, and shortstops just generally speaking get paid a lot of money, and even if it's a bad year for Bo, if he turns it around even a little bit next year, he probably will be worth a lot of money either to the Blue Jays or to another bidder in free agency. But, I mean, the truth is he's still really good, right? I mean, I generally speaking feel like he's not the guy we've seen this year based on his track record. I just generally feel like he probably has one foot out the door just because he knows someone's going to pay him. But I mean, I think that's why you don't trade him, because you're not going to get the max or even anywhere close to that kind of value back for him.
Yeah. It's about timing, right? Yeah. Like, prior to this season, he'd been so consistent year to year, and you could go to market with him and say, this is a shortstop you can absolutely count on to be well above average at this premium position and hit you 20 plus home runs and be among the league leader in hits and all that jazz you'd say about him. And in a world where he performed well, but the Blue Jays still really struggled in the standings, which definitely would have been possible, even if he had performed well, I think the Blue Jays still would be kind of roughly in the hole they're in now, you know, a slightly not quite as bad a version of it. In that world, and there's a year and a half of him left for you to trade, and you're confident he's not going to be extended by you, maybe you do go to market with him at this trade deadline. But he was just such a distressed asset at this point. Maybe if he comes back at some point this season and kind of shows he's who he was, maybe in the offseason you could explore that again if you feel like he's not going to be a big part of the future. But it was, the timing was just off on it. And, you know, realistically, everything they've done with their moves has shown, and you might feel this is misguided out there, but it has shown that they want to try and compete in 2025. That's why they kept Chad Green. That's why they kept Chris Bassett. It's why they didn't even really consider trading Vladdy. Nothing was close on that. And so even if they'd been in that spot where Bo had been performing really well, I don't think they really would have explored trading him, but there would have been an intellectual argument for doing that. That's for sure.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Giacomo in Windsor. Giacomo, what's up, pal? What's on your mind today?
Sure, I'll get you a speaker. So I wasn't going to call in, but I've been listening. I listen all the time, you know that.
Yeah.
And between the between the people that text in and a lot of the commentators I love, everybody says Vladdy wants to be here. I've heard that for the last 2 or 3 months. Do you agree with me that that's the overall sentiment?
Yeah, I would say so.
So I hear that all the time. And I'm always for the player getting as much money as they can get. So, but I'm not buying it. Like, Vladdy said the last place he wanted to play would be New York. And then 2 or 3 months ago, he's like, no, I would consider playing in New York. Business is business. So to me, yeah, he says he loves it here and he wants to be here. But he said he never wanted to play in New York. Now he'll play in New York. So for me, you know, and I'm not sure he wants to be in Toronto because he hasn't put his name on a contract. And I'm not quite sure that the Jays want him in Toronto because they haven't given enough money for him to say yes. So I'm not buying this whole thing that Vladdy wants to be here and he loves Toronto. I'm sure he likes it, but does he love it? What is he going to say? He wants somebody who's going to give him the most money. And that's where he'll go play. So to me, I'm not buying it. And, you know, I want him to make as much money, like I said, as he can. But to me, both sides aren't saying they're in love because there's no name on the contract signed. Thanks, Joe. Hey. Take it easy, boys.
Yeah, see you, man. Thanks, Giacomo. I appreciate the call, pal. Okay, so I guess interpreted Vladdy's comments, because he's right. Like, Giacomo is right. Like, a month ago or maybe even more than that. Gosh, feels like time is a flat circle, Nick, but it all blends together at this point of the year. But he's right. Like, there was a point earlier in the year, prior to the All-Star break, certainly, where Vladdy said something, I'm paraphrasing, but he said something along the lines of, like, yeah, like, regarding my previous comments, I'll play anywhere, right? To me, based on everything Vladdy has said over the course of his entire Blue Jays career, to me, I always interpreted that as like, he knows he's close to free agency, and he has been so pointed in his criticism of like never wanting to play for the Yankees that like either his dad or his agency or some kind of representation was just like, hey, knock it off. Stop saying stuff about other teams, because there's a good chance they are the team coming to offer you a bazillion dollars in free agency. I think that's how I always interpreted it, Nick, just because I just feel like from a business perspective, it makes the most sense for him to like keep as many options open as possible. But I mean, at the same time, he has never been like I don't think he's ever criticized the Blue Jays in terms of like he has said like he's done like the money sign a couple times in the dugout after hitting home runs. And he, you know, when he's wearing the home run jacket, and he's talked about how he likes the jacket and all these different things. But I don't know, like I just personally have never really gotten the sense that Vladdy doesn't want to play in Toronto, just that he walked, quote unquote, walked back the comments just because he's this close to free agency. And like, it's more of a business decision in that sense.
When players say that they love where they are, I do think some skepticism is normally warranted, because why wouldn't they say that, right? Like, Vladdy is stuck as a Blue Jay for now. Why wouldn't he say, oh, I love it here? Like, that's just good PR.
Yeah.
But on the flip side of the Yankees thing, I imagine that he really kind of doesn't like the Yankees. And when he made that statement about how he would never play for them, that might have been kind of an emotional, like, in that second thing that he did. And as you mentioned, I think someone later came to him and said, you know what, like, the Yankees don't have a long-term first baseman necessarily, and they are one of those teams that hands out those massive, massive contracts. And maybe you don't want to narrow your market when you're about to hit free agency. Even the specter of the Yankees potentially bidding on him could have value to him in free agency, even if he doesn't want to go there. So it's just not smart for him to say, I'm going to cut out that team that is notorious for spending tons of money and having huge free agent contracts. I'm out on that. So I don't think it's a big deal that he walked it back necessarily. When I think about why the Blue Jays and Vladdy have not come together on a contract extension, my view is the biggest reason why is that there's been this year-to-year inconsistency with him. And so there have been moments where the Blue Jays probably didn't feel like they had a great handle on what to expect from Vladdy in the future. Mm-hmm. And when you're giving out the length of contract a guy his age is going to demand, you got to know that. And so this year he's sort of showing them, right? He's showing them, you know what, 2023, that wasn't me. And so if they tried to sign him after 2023, it would have been odd, because he's asking for a huge deal, and they just saw him be a decent starting player, but not really a star player. That's a tough guy to invest in. After 2022, they might have thought, you know, is he going to bounce back to 2021, or is this the guy he is? It's just been hard for them to get a grasp on who he can be at this level. And I think that having this season, and we'll see how it ends, but say he finishes the season, you know, nearish to where he is now, not like at this heater for the rest of the year, but like his year long stats for the rest of the season, then he's established, oh, I can hit at kind of a superstar level multiple times. This is more who I'm going to be. And if I'm the Blue Jays, then I start to feel a lot more comfortable signing him to that massive extension. So with Bo, for instance, he was giving them the same season year after year after year. He was the same guy. So from just a pure on-field perspective, you could have said, you know what, I know who you are and I like it and I want to sign that deal. And my inkling has been that Bo has just been interested in testing free agency since the beginning. And so that's never really come together. With Vladdy, even if there's interest on both sides, he's been a very difficult player to price.
Yeah.
And I think that will change a little bit this offseason.
I think so too. And again, I do kind of wonder how they're going to thread the needle of all of arbitration, which, I mean, there's like a set deadline for arbitration. So like you're kind of talking about coming to a deal before you get to the arbitration part of the offseason. But arbitration, how much money Juan Soto is going to make, whether it's for the Blue Jays or the Yankees or the Mets or literally any other team in baseball, and what Pete Alonso is going to make, right? Like, only because you kind of think they want to wait for Pete Alonso, because in at least some facet as a first baseman, it will help inform them. Because again, I do think Vladdy is a better overall hitter than Alonso, even if Alonso hits more home runs than Vladdy in a general sense. But there's that aspect of it. There's Soto, because Soto is like a generational special talent that kind of almost transcends these conversations to a certain extent. And we also know he's going to make a boatload of cash. He wants to be the highest paid player in baseball. And I mean, we can joke about the deferred money for Shohei Ohtani, but if he wants to beat that money, then it's going to cost a pretty penny from someone. And then the arbitration itself for Vladdy. It's going to be really interesting to watch that conversation and that discussion develop in the offseason. 416-870-0591, 888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Those are the numbers to call. 590-590, name and location. That's how you can reach us on the People's Text Line. Standard data and messaging rates may apply. Let's take a quick break. When we come back to the phones, back to the text line, you're listening to Blue Jays Talk. Show and Nick with you on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
I honestly didn't feel like seeing him swing. that was kind of it, you know. We talk about being really careful with him, and I think, like I said, that's what can lead to mistakes when you're really trying to be very fine. And at that point, it's 4-1. He's in a different category, I think, than anyone else in the league, to where he can just flip the script of a game with one swing. Obviously, he's done it twice in this series, so didn't really feel like watching him swing. Yeah, I think he's pretty damn close right now, you know. Homer double single today. I think that, yeah, teams are definitely taking notice of that. And I think Vladdy has kind of responded in a good way to counteract that a little bit with his approach.
That is John Schneider speaking to the media. Got a little double shot of John Schneider there as we welcome you back to Jay's Talk here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Show and Nick with you until the top of the hour. So the first clip there, Nick, was Schneider talking about the Blue Jays after Aaron Judge launches his 41st home run of the year, which you talked about earlier, off of Barrios in the first inning, bottom of the first inning. Then the next time Judge comes up to bat with the bases empty, they intentionally walk Judge, which you don't see very often. And then the second clip was the media asking Vladdy about, asking Schneider about whether or not Vladdy is starting to have a Judgian impact. So the interesting thing, I did think it was interesting to watch them intentionally walk Judge the second time he was up. And I mean, I guess that's the kind of player he is. And I don't think you intentionally walk guys like in the first inning necessarily, but and they didn't. And then he launches the 41st home run of the season. But what did you make of the decision to intentionally walk Judge with the four fingers there?
Generally speaking, I don't like intentional walks outside of a few specific situations where you feel incredible about the next matchup and this person is really hurting your pitcher. You know, Judge came into the game, I believe he already had four home runs against Barrios, and then he hit another one in the first. Like, they really didn't feel good about that matchup. There were two outs. They felt good about their ability to get out of the inning if they walked him. It's one of the few cases, I'm not sure if I'm pulling the strings, I'm doing it, but I understand it. Like, he's almost reached that level. And when I think of intentionally walking guys, my mind goes back to Barry Bonds in the sort of early 2000s.
Bases loaded, gets intentionally walked.
and that's another level, but it's not, you know, Judge is not as far from that as we might think. Like, offense is down in the game since that happened. So if you line up Judge against Bonds, you know, Bonds is way, way better.
Yeah.
But if you do it based on league averages, like take OPS plus, where 100 is average. You know, Barry Bonds in those years was in the sort of like 230 to 260 range, which is just insane. And Judge in two of the last 3 years is over 200, which is just not a number that we see from guys. So he's not quite at that Bonds level where it's like, let's just forget about pitching to him. But he's not as far away as, you know, as he might be. And so I think it's ultimately justifiable. And I know there's a lot of people on Twitter who are inclined to be angry with John Schneider kind of regardless of what he does. But for this particular instance, I don't have a huge problem with it.
That is Nick Ashbourne. I'm Show Alley. We're here on Jay's Talk until the top of the hour. Still some time to give us a call. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Text line open as well. 590-590, name and location. Before we go back to the text line, I wanted to get to a couple more things with you here, Nick. And I wanted to chat a little bit about Lo Perfido and Horowitz with you. Okay, so I've said this before. I think I've had this conversation with you before, but I said this on Jay's Talk a couple of times. When it comes to batting order construction, I have said I'm not super high on, like, if a guy bats second instead of third, I don't know. Is that really going to be the reason you win or lose a ball game? Like, I don't know. Probably not. Having said that, if you want like one more AB for a guy and he's batting in a different spot in the order and you lose because of that, then, you know, you could point to that. But just a general sense, when you look at the batting order today, I do find it interesting because today, for example, Lo Perfido is batting second, as he has a couple of times since he got traded to the Blue Jays. Horowitz batting fifth. And, like, again, this is nothing against Joey Lo Perfido. I actually quite liked what I've seen from him in like a very, very small sample size. But after seeing Spencer Horowitz, who has slumped a little bit recently, but after he turns in an 11 pitch walk And just like generally speaking, Horwitz continues to not look super overmatched in most ABs. He's like, he's kind of a pest for opposing pitchers, which I kind of like. He doesn't hit for a lot of power, but he finds ways to get aboard. Just grinding away ABs is what I like to see from Spencer Horwitz. And again, you brought this up to me off the air, but he has slumped a teensy bit. Even amidst that, I still think I'd like to see Horwitz bat in front of Vladdy more often than not if it can be helped.
Horwitz's best quality offensively is his ability to get on base. So having him further up the lineup makes sense. I actually kind of like him as a leadoff man. That's probably not going to happen for the Blue Jays much while George Springer is in town. I think from a theoretical standpoint, Horwitz is probably more of a number two and Loperfido is more of a number five. Like Loperfido is a high strikeout, more of a power guy, someone who you want to bat with guys on base to bring them home with the home run. Horwitz does less of that. I think a lot of this is two things. One, Horwitz has been struggling. Like it's been kind of quiet, but the last 15 games before today, he hit 200 and slugged 267. So like those are pretty bad numbers, to be honest. But Horwitz has done so well that the numbers still look good when they flash up on the screen and no one's really noticed. But he's been scuffling a bit. Great day today with his hit and that amazing walk as well. And the second thing is Loperfido. This is, for me, it's challenging him and it's evaluating him. They literally want to get him as many plate appearances as possible. They want to know if he's part of the plan going forward. And in terms of maximizing your chances of winning a ball game, I don't think hitting Joey Loperfido in the second position against a tough lefty is necessarily how you win a ball game. But they want to see him face tough lefties and they want to see him get as many at bats as possible. And so that's why they're doing it. It's one of those things where it's odd because it doesn't seem congruent with our normal strategies we associate with writing out a lineup, but that's what they're doing. They're taking looks at him. They're challenging him. They're getting more on film with Joey. And so I don't have a problem with it from that perspective. If we were watching this game and it's in the middle of a massive playoff race and this is the type of lineup that the Blue Jays are putting out, I think it would be right to be angry and it's like, what are they doing here? But that's just not where the team is.
Yeah, and that's why I said off the top, like when what I'm looking forward to seeing for the rest of the year, like just in a general sense, Nick, is just generally speaking, you know, like how are these guys going to acquit themselves between now and the end of the season? I mean, there's less than 2 months to go. I think the season ends on September 29th, I think is the last day. It's like the last Sunday of September. And then, you know, it's off to hockey and basketball season for the both of us, but in the NFL as well, which I'm excited for. But, you know, like until then, these are the things I'm looking at, right? Like not necessarily like is Loperfido batting second and Horwitz batting fifth, but just like what are their places going to be? But you're right. They are trying to figure that out by trying them out in different spots. David Schneider is another one, right? I mean, we got in a text here, 590-590 name and location. Tina from London, Ontario, actually texted me during the game yesterday. I didn't do the post-game show yesterday. Blair and Barker did. Blair and Barker back on, I guess not Monday because there's a day off, but on Tuesday. But Tina had texted in to say David Schneider needs to go back to Buffalo. And Jen in Toronto, Jen, always appreciate your text. She says, Schneider, almost unplayable for 2 months. Good for Vladdy, but just too many AAA players. And I mean, she's not wrong, right? I mean, in the sense that there are a lot of guys who are on this team that, like, if you have the offseason you want this coming year, this coming next offseason, and then you look at the starting lineup, the opening day lineup in like end of March of 2025, it probably is not a lineup that has like Addison Barger on it, Stuart Baroa, De Los Santos. Like these guys are probably not major league ball players. So they're trying to figure out, to your point, what these guys are. But I don't know what David Schneider is. I don't know if you have like a more concrete answer. It just, since he has become a major leaguer, which I guess was a full-time major leaguer, earlier this season, which was in like May, and then that's when Springer was really slumping, and then he was sick for a little while, so they put Schneider atop the batting order. It looked like it worked out a little bit, and then but pretty much since then Schneider's been kind of slumping, right? And I'm not sure what the obvious answer is for David Schneider, because on one hand you've seen probably what like the peak of David Schneider is, which is right when he got called up in August of last year, like about a year ago almost exactly. But I don't know, since then he has had flashes, but I guess I'm still waiting, vis-a-vis the conversation we had about Horwitz, I'm kind of still waiting for him to adjust back to major league pitching in a sense.
The order that everything's happened with Schneider makes it easy for us to tell a story, right? Like he arrived on the scene and he was incredible, and then people have adjusted and now he's struggling. And there, and I'm not saying there isn't truth to that, but I also think there's a lot of randomness to when guys get hot and cold as well. Like, think about George Springer. Like, that phrase, unplayable for a couple months, absolutely applied to George Springer for the first part of the season. And then out of nowhere, he finds this new gear and he kind of gets it back going. He's not as hot recently, but he looks so much better. So if you kind of take Davis Schneider's numbers and you smashed his two seasons together, you're talking about his first approximately 500 chips to the plate. He's still well above average offensively at the MLB level for someone who's relatively young. He's 25. Like, this is not a player that I'm giving up on because of these couple months. He is someone who probably needs to show stuff down the stretch in order to get into their plans. Because right now he probably figures to be a guy who plays against lefties, a bit of a utility guy, play some second, play some outfield, someone maybe who's a pinch hitter in certain matchups where you feel like his power could make a difference. That's where he's sitting kind of at this point. And if he wants to be an everyday player, which, you know, he's looked like at times, he needs to show more. Because, yeah, it's been a couple months here where he hasn't done much. And his season-long numbers have kind of crept below league average now. He's a bat-first player. He has to hit to be productive, to be valuable. He's not an amazing fielder at any of the positions that he plays. So I do believe that there's some aspect of recency bias where we're kind of souring on him quickly because of what we've seen lately. And I'm not sure that we should be quite so sure that he can't refine it, but he does have to show it. And, you know, he's going to have a couple months here where he'll get fairly regular bats.
That's another thing. I mean, you talk about who's going to get ABs here. I mean, now that IKF's not on this team anymore, and I mean, Ernie Clemente has been swinging it a little bit better as of late, but still he's quite an aggressive hitter, as they've talked about with him. And he's admitted that as much, but with Clement and Schneider and Horwitz kind of battling for, I guess, a couple fewer spots. And certainly some of the other guys are getting called up and they're going to be in the mix as well. Like the Barges of the world and De Los Santos and so on. Like, they're in the mix when it comes to any position on this team getting more run, I suppose. But Davis Schneider does have actually more opportunity to turn it around because there are, like you said in the pregame, they basically traded like a third of an active roster at the deadline.
Well, yeah, when you talk about sending him down to Buffalo, like, who are you bringing back up? I know there's young kid Joey Votto is starting to swat a little bit down there, but you already have guys like Stuart Baroa and Luis De Los Santos on the roster who really are kind of AAA players you don't have that much long-term hope for. Like, they're very much in a different category from Schneider. I don't think he's the first guy to send down unless you really feel like he's hit a wall and he needs to regain confidence, and that'd be beneficial for his development. But in terms of like the best options to throw out there, he's still among the better players they have to offer at the big league level.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's get one more call in before we go back to the text line. Let's go to Shlomo in Scarborough. Shlomo, what's up?
Hey guys. It's been more exciting watching these young guys. I got to admit, all this hype with Joey Loperfido and just seeing all these new guys come in and get some reps. But I wanted to add into that Davis Schneider conversation. You guys made some good points. I was listening to him in a podcast interview, the Jays fan podcast in the offseason, Gate 14, and I was really shocked with the way he was talking about himself because, you know, you think of athletes, you got to be super confident to be in that space. He does not talk well about himself. I hope this guy can, like, he wasn't talking bad about himself, but he was talking like, not like he was, like he shocked himself, you know? And he was setting records last year when he came into the league. I don't know if that's because the front office didn't show the belief after he was doing those crazy things and was sitting him and not really giving him regular at-bats, but I feel like mentally they messed something up with him, or else maybe he's just not the guy right now. I do like him. I hope he can turn it around, but I don't know. Mentally, does not talk like the guy, and this is a mental game. You got to be confident. We're seeing it in the way Vlad carries himself right now. It's a lot more mental than it is physical, and he just doesn't have the confidence.
Hey, Shlomo, I appreciate the call as always, man. You know, it is true. I actually did listen to that interview with Johnny and Avery, who, by the way, do a great job. Love those guys, just like Nick and Andrew do on Blue Jays Happy Hour. But, you know, I remember hearing that conversation, thinking to myself, you know, like, confidence is a big thing with major leaguers, certainly. And I admit when I watch his body language at the plate and he'll kind of offer at a pitch he knows he shouldn't offer at, and he kind of like meekly walks back to the dugout. It does look like he is struggling a little bit. And it's just interesting, right? Because he's one of the few players I remember, like, recently at the very least, who, you know, talk to Hazel after a game, after they have like a big moment, and he'll be like, yeah, like, the high heat is my kryptonite. I remember I think he said that almost word for word. And it just, I'm not saying that like speaks to his mental state by itself, but it's just, it probably is tough for like for you to have a great start and then for it to kind of like compound when things don't go your way.
Yeah, I'm always reluctant to make judgments on what's going on between people's ears because I feel like people are overconfident with that. There's a lot of body language policing that goes on in the sports talk space. So I want to put that there. I think he is sort of a self-effacing individual. And sometimes, again, if he's hitting really well and he's like that, people are like, oh, he's a humble guy. Yeah. He's the coolest. And if he's hitting poorly, it's like, oh, man, this guy just doesn't have the killer instinct.
Yeah,
so people's the way they present themselves is interpreted so differently based on how they're performing. Like Vladdy's a perfect example. Vladdy is so fun to watch. Like we were talking, you know, off air earlier about the way he takes pitches and he goes down on his knees and he's got all these gestures that he does. And, you know, the way he interacts with players who come to first base, there's just so many things about Vladdy where he brings joy to the game. And when Vladdy's not performing well, people are like, he's not focused on the game. Yeah, yeah. He's not serious enough. And when when he is performing well, people say he's a superstar. He's the kind of guy that really interacts with the fans and he's got more cachet than the average player because he has that superstar element. So I don't know. I think a lot of the times those storylines really follow based on production, and it's hard to say exactly where a player's mental state is. I understand that interpretation with Snyder. I just think that we have to be careful when we wade into those waters.
I do hope he turns it around. I'll say this because he's a lot of fun to watch. And I think we've seen enough from Davis Schneider, albeit again, I mean, we literally just hit a year for him in terms of him being in the majors, right? Like he was called up in beginning of August, 2023. And now that's where we are in 2024. So I'm not saying like the conversation is a done deal, just like it's not a done deal for Spencer Horwitz. It certainly is not, but just, I think we've seen enough from Davis Schneider, Nick, that when it comes to like forecasting spots for next year, like I think he is on the team, but he does have a lot left to prove. Before we go, we got about 90 seconds here. Yariel Rodriguez likely going to start tomorrow against Garrett Cole, who I guess survived his bullpen session and is not fatigued anymore. What are you expecting from Y-Rod tomorrow?
I mean, he's given them consistently strong innings over the last little bit. With him, I always like to see whether he's going to be more, you know, he's going to expand that repertoire out, or he's going to be more of kind of a concentrated fastball slider guy. Sometimes he looks a little bit more like the high leverage reliever. I like it when he spreads it out, and it's a tough Yankees lineup. You kind of have to show them a lot of different things, but he's been a pleasant surprise for them. And obviously had that one outing that did not go as he would have intended. But generally speaking, he's been a positive note for the Blue Jays recently, and maybe he'll be able to keep it rolling.
Yeah, I think on the whole of Rodriguez's season, it's been a fun to watch. So we'll pick that up tomorrow. Looking forward to watching Y-Rod against Garrett Cole in the rubber match of this series. Appreciate you all being with us on Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by the local family-owned Crown Rust Control Centers in Perth and Smith Falls, Ontario. Protect your vehicle from rust today. Find your local family-owned Crown at crown.com, Canada's number one rust protection. For Nick Ashbourne, Eric Smith, Caleb Joseph, Tom Young, Nick Blackmore, I'm Sho Ali. That does it for us. We are out of here. We are both back tomorrow to put a bow on this series in New York. Have a great Saturday night, everyone. We'll talk to you later.